2 days later, Slaughter and his men rode toward the outskirts of Pueblo, Colorado. They'd lost two of the wounded on the trail, and there were a few more men looking all the worse for wear. Slaughter glanced back over his shoulder at the men riding behind him.
Damn, we're down to 15 men. We need to see if we can pick up a few here.
Whitey looked around at the town as they entered the city limits.
Looks pretty promising. Most mining towns like this have their fair share of hard cases and men who fancy themselves gun hawks.
Take the men to the biggest saloon in town. I'm gonna go have a word with the sheriff.
The sheriff?
Yep. I'm gonna make him an offer that he'll have a hard time turning down.
While the men proceeded to the nearest saloon, Slaughter reined in before a wooden building with a hand-lettered sign on it that read, Jail. He walked through the door and found a tall, heavy-set man with a huge pot belly leaning back in a chair with his feet up on two planks, which were stretched across a couple of beer barrels and evidently served as his desk.
Yeah? What can I do for you, mister?
You the sheriff?
You think I'm wearing this tin star for decoration?
Slaughter grinned and then slapped the man's feet off the desk. The man started to get to his feet, and Slaughter backhanded him. As the sheriff grabbed for his gun, Slaughter drew his pistol and stuck the barrel against the sheriff's nose.
I doubt if they pay you enough to try what you're thinking of trying.
What? What do you want?
What's your name?
Will Durant.
Well, Will, I'm here to help you out. I'm gonna start by putting this back in my holster, but don't even think about trying to outdraw me, Will. Men a lot better and faster than you have tried, and they're all forked end up right now.
Who are you, mister?
My name is Jim Slaughter.
Big Jim Slaughter?
There's some that calls me that.
What can I do for you, Mr. Slaughter?
It's what we can do for each other, Will. I'm gonna give you $100, and you're gonna point out the baddest men in town to me. The ones who give you bad dreams at night. The kind you don't want to run into on a dark night.
Why would you wanna?
Will, don't ask foolish questions. All you have to know is you're going to be $100 richer, and you're going to have a lot less men you have to worry about in a couple days.
All right, Mr. Slaughter. Let's take a walk around town, and I'll show you the badasses. And this stinking town's got plenty of them.
By just after dusk, Slaughter and Sheriff Durant had picked out 20 men who were known to make their living using their guns instead of their wits. As the men were pointed out to him on his rounds with Durant, Slaughter approached each of them and told them to meet him after dark at the Lucky Lady Saloon on the edge of town. As he walked through the bat wings, followed by Whitey and Swede, Slaughter looked around at the saloon. It was little more than a large tent with planks for a bar and whiskey bottles with no labels on them lining the shelves. He shook his head.
What a name for this place. There isn't a lady in sight, and if there was, no one in their right mind would call her lucky.
You got that right, boss. I've seen better places than this in ghost towns.
Slaughter walked to the bar and motioned for the barman to give him a bottle. He took it and banged it on the wood to get the attention of the men sitting around the room.
My name's Jim Slaughter. I got a little job planned a few miles from here, and I need to hire some men who know their way around a six-gun and ain't afraid of using it.
What kind of job?
The kind where you do what you're told and you make a lot of money.
That ain't good enough for me.
What's your name, mister?
Augustus Skinner. Why do you want to know?
So they'll know what to put on the cross over your grave on Boot Hill. Ah! Now, are there any other questions?
If it wouldn't piss you off too bad, I'd kind of like to know what the job pays for I sign on.
No, that's perfectly all right. I'm paying $100 a month or any part thereof, and there's a bonus of $1,000 a man when the job's over.
I got one more question.
Yeah?
Where do I sign up?
Now, let me warn you before y'all rush up here to join our little group. It's a no cakewalk. The men we're going up against are tough and are also good with their guns. A lot of you won't be coming back or collecting the money. It's a dangerous job, and that's why the pay's so high.
Mr. Slaughter, living in this town is dangerous, and we ain't exactly getting paid for it. I'm ready for damn near anything that'll get me a stake so I can get out of here before winter sets in.
All right. Those of you who are interested, drinks are on me. The rest of you can leave with no hard feelings.
Not one of the men left the room. The pay Slaughter was offering was 3 times what they could earn doing anything else other than mining. And these were not the sort of men to break their backs digging in the mountains around Pueblo, hoping to find enough gold or silver for beans and bacon. Slaughter turned to the bartender.
Set them up and keep them coming till I say enough.
As Smoke led his friends towards Big Rock, Lewis twisted in his saddle and spoke to Pearlie, riding behind him.
How are you doing with that wound? Is it showing any signs or symptoms of suppuration?
Pearlie stretched his neck and moved his left arm around in a circle to see if there was any pain or soreness. He'd taken a bullet that skimmed along the skin over his left shoulder blade, burning a furrow half an inch deep but not penetrating any deeper. Though the wound wasn't serious, Smoke and the others were worried about infection.
No, Lewis, it seems to be healing up right nice. A tad stiff, but no more than you'd expect.
As he spoke, Pearlie noticed Cal had a wide grin on his face.
What you find so funny, Cal?
Oh, a thought just sort of occurred to me.
Well, since when you start thinking, Cal? You ain't got a brain in that empty head of yours.
Well, it seems kind of funny to me. 4 of us rode through them outlaws, guns blazing and going off all around us. And you the onlyest one got shot.
So?
Maybe I ain't the only lead magnet around. It might just be that you're gonna take my place. The one always seems to take the bullet every time we get in a fight.
I don't see it that way, Cal.
Why not?
Way I see it, this here bullet I took was probably headed for you, sure as hell, and I just sort of got in the way.
You saying you took lead that was meant for me?
Yeah, so that means you owe me for saving you the misery of getting shot again.
If that's so, and I ain't saying it is, mind you, I bet I know what you think I ought to give you for saving me.
What's that, Cal?
I bet letting you share my first batch of bear sign Miss Sally makes when we get home would square things.
Well, now, that might just make things right between us.
Forget it, Pearlie. I've been thinking on those bear sign for the past 100 miles. Worst thing about being away from home all these weeks is missing Miss Sally's cooking. So you ain't getting none of my bear sign. No siree!
Jim Slaughter lay in bed next to the whore he'd bought for the night. Finally, unable to sleep, he sat up in bed and poured himself a glass of whiskey. He leaned back against the headboard, drinking and thinking about Monte Carson. He realized he should have known there was something not quite right about the man the day they robbed the army payroll years ago. Jim Slaughter sat on his dun stud in the early morning hour, hoping the fog that was just lessening with the coming of dawn wouldn't mess up his plans. He had 10 men with him, some still wearing remnants of the gray uniforms of the Confederacy, and some wearing the blue of the Union. His gang wasn't made up of men who had any political ideals. Most were men who had been on the Owl Hoot Trail long before the North and South decided to settle their affairs on the battlefield. He pulled out a battered gold pocket watch and checked the time. The special train carrying the Army payroll was scheduled to be in Fort Smith, Arkansas at 10 in the morning. It was now 8:30, so it should be along any minute now. He didn't like planning the robbery so close to the fort, but it was the only suitable location for miles, so he'd have to chance having the fort send out a posse after him. Of course, if there were no guards from the train left to spread an alarm, he didn't have much to fear from any pursuit. He grabbed his binoculars and looked down the sloping hillside at the twisted, blackened metal of the tracks where they dynamited him just before dawn. The section was at the end of a sharp curve on the tracks, and it should be invisible to the engineer of the train until it was too late to stop the speeding locomotive. His informant at Fort Smith had said that this payroll, meant for the troops stationed at nearby forts guarding the Indian nations, should total $40,000 or $50,000. The information had cost Slaughter $50, which made it well worth it if it was true. The informant, a sergeant in the supply division, had also said there would be no more than 8 guards on the train. Slaughter glanced over his shoulder at the men sitting in their saddles, waiting his command. They were all experienced gunmen. Some who hired out to various ranches involved in range wars, some stage robbers, and a couple who'd had experience robbing trains in the past. It was a mixed bunch, men he'd hired with the promise of a big score and lots of money to split up afterwards. He looked to the east and could just make out through the morning mist what looked like smoke from an engine over the horizon.
Get ready, men. Load them up 6 and 6, and don't worry none if some bluebelly gets in front of one of your bullets. We're gonna get that payroll no matter how many guards they have guarding it. In fact, I wouldn't be too concerned if none of the guards lived through the robbery.
One of his men eased a flea-bitten gray horse up next to Slaughter.
You didn't say nothing about killing a bunch of guards when you talked about this.
What's your name again?
Monty Carson.
What did you expect, Carson? You think we're just gonna ride down there to that train and hold out our hands and them guards were just gonna hand over the armory's money without a fight?
No, but I figured if we got the drop on them, there wouldn't be no need of killing them.
You let me worry about leading this here gang, Carson. You just fill your hands with iron and follow me, all right?
Carson nodded and reined his horse back to the rear of the group of men, a worried look on his face. Minutes later, a steam locomotive pulling a passenger car, boxcar, and a caboose pulled into view. Slaughter pulled his bandana up over his nose and motioned for his men to get ready. The dance was about to begin. The train raced around the curve in the tracks, steam and smoke pouring from its smokestack, as if the engineer was intent on making up some lost time. Suddenly, the engineer must have seen the ruptured track, for he applied full brakes.
Shag your mouth, boys!
He plowed up 30 feet of Arkansas soil before it finally stopped with the engineers and firemen's bodies hanging unconscious in the broken, twisted engine compartment. The passenger car just behind the engine was also on its side, with several bodies strewn along the furrow in the dirt where it had been dragged. 4 or 5 men dressed in army blue were staggering from the wreckage, wobbly on their legs as they tried to figure out what the hell had happened. Slaughter's men rode down. The man in the boxcar eased open the door, poked the barrel of a rifle out, and began to return the outlaw's fire. One of Slaughter's men went down hard, a bullet tearing his throat out. As bullets from Slaughter's men peppered the wall of the boxcar, the man inside pulled the door shut. As the gang separated and rode around the train, circling behind the defending soldiers, the men realized their position was hopeless, and they threw down their guns, raising their hands in the air. Slaughter reined in his horse in front of them.
Keep reaching for the sky, boys!
Slaughter took his remaining 8 men and stood in front of the boxcar containing the payroll.
Open up that door and come out with your hands up and you won't be hurt.
You go to hell!
Slaughter went to his saddlebags and took out 4 sticks of dynamite tied together with string. He walked to the boxcar and placed the dynamite on the ground underneath the door.
Get back, boys!
After the smoke cleared, Slaughter could see the car lying on its side. A strong box among the wreckage lying next to the wounded guard, who was covered with soot and grime. He was holding his shattered right arm and glaring at the outlaws. His rifle lay nearby, but it was out of his reach. Slaughter grinned at his men, pulled his Colt from its holster, and climbed up into what was left of the boxcar.
I told you to come out.
You'll pay for this. The army will track you down, and you'll spend the rest of your lives in Yuma prison.
I don't think so.
God damn it, you didn't have to do that.
I know I didn't have to, Monty. I wanted to.
Slaughter bent, picked up the box, and heaved it off the car to the ground in front of his men.
Get that lock off and let's see what we have, boys.
Carson, who was nearest to the box, jumped down off his horse and grabbed it. He pulled out his pistol and shot the lock off, opening the top of the box. He pulled several canvas bags out and laid them on the ground. Using a knife, he slid the top of one of the sacks and held it up to view. It was filled to the brim with fresh new greenbacks.
Gather up those bags. We still got some work to do.
Slaughter walked around the passenger car toward the soldiers who were still standing with their hands in the air.
All right, boys, get on your knees and face the car.
The soldiers looked at him with fear-widened eyes as they kneeled and faced away from him. He stepped behind the men, peered back the hammer of his pistol, and pointed it at the back of their heads.
Hold on, there ain't no need of that.
I told you once, we ain't gonna leave no witnesses.
Carson drew his pistol in a lightning-quick move and pointed it at Slaughter.
And I told you, we ain't gonna kill no defenseless men.
Listen, Carson, if we leave these men behind, they'll warn the army post at Fort Smith and we'll have a platoon of soldiers on our trail before we can even get away.
How are they gonna warn them? Fly? It's more than 15 miles to the fort. By the time these soldiers walk that far, we'll be in the next county. And ain't none of them seen our faces.
What the hell? I guess you're right.
Slaughter holstered his sidearm and walked to his horse.
Stick that money in your saddlebags and let's burn dust and get out of here.
Slaughter's men had been riding hard for 12 hours.
Hey, look behind us!
As the gang reined to a halt, they could see trail dust rising from a patrol of army men less than 5 miles behind them.
Now look what you done, Carson. You might have killed us all by letting those men go. I'll shoot you down right here.
Carson turned his eyes on Slaughter, and he let his hand fall to hang next to his pistol.
You're welcome to try, Slaughter. Anytime.
Slaughter got a cold feeling in the pit of his stomach when he looked into Carson's eyes, and he remembered how quick he'd been on the draw back at the train tracks.
Well, can't be helped now. We gotta split up. Everybody scatter. We'll meet in 2 weeks down in Del Rio.
What about the money?
There's no time to split it up now. That posse's gonna be on us like ticks on a dog for long. Carson, you keep the money with you and we'll divide it up in Del Rio, then head down into Mexico.
The army patrol continued to get closer and no one wanted to argue with Slaughter. The men spurred their horses in different directions to get away from the patrol.
Yeah, I should have known a do-gooder like Carson was too good to be trusted with the money.
Slaughter drained his whiskey, turned to the whore, and slapped her on the butt.
Wake up! I ain't paying you to sleep.
As the group rode into town, Smoke glanced around at the changes to Big Rock since his last visit there. They'd been greeted several miles from town by the sentry team stationed there, and he was glad the citizens of Big Rock were taking the threat posed by Slaughter seriously. As they traveled down Main Street, he could see new construction on many of the rooftops, small wooden walls with gun ports built in, behind which men could kneel and have a clear field of fire to the street below. When he looked down the side streets they passed, he could see barricades at the end of the streets, constructed so men on horses couldn't pass. Windows of many of the storefronts were boarded up to protect the expensive glass panes that had been brought in from Denver by wagon.
Wonder where everybody is.
Inside, I suspect, watching us pass by. It seems the town is exceptionally well prepared for the upcoming onslaught by Slaughter and his minions.
I wish you'd speak English, Lewis. That way a body could understand what you're saying.
Lewis's suspicions were confirmed when several men, holding Winchesters and other shotguns, stepped from doorways to wave hello to the returning heroes. As they drew abreast of the sheriff's office, Monty walked out the door. Wide grin on his face and a long-barreled shotgun cradled in his arm.
Damn, but it's good to see you made it back safe and sound. Come on over to Lewis's place and I'll treat you all to some lunch.
Yes, sir!
Hurley spurred his horse toward Lewis's saloon and restaurant down the street, leaving the others to eat his dust.
Monty, you should know how dangerous it is to mention food to Pearly when he's astride a horse. You're liable to get run over in the rush to the table.
They all gathered around a table in Lewis's place and watched as Lewis had an emotional greeting from his employees, especially his chef, Andre, who actually wept with joy at seeing his old friend and boss back safely.
Andre, cook us up some steaks, fried potatoes, sliced tomatoes, and peaches, and some of your special coffee. It's been so long since we had a hot meal, I can hardly remember what good food tastes like.
Andre? Could I have some sarsaparilla instead of coffee? My mouth's been watering all morning just thinking about getting some more of that stuff.
Andre nodded, smiled, and hustled back into the kitchen. Once they had coffee in front of them, Smoke asked Monty about the preparations he'd made for Slaughter's raid.
We fortified most of the buildings, both on the roofs and the doors. Double-backed the doors with 2 inches of wood to stop any bullets from penetrating, and covered most of the windows where people are going to be stationed.
I noticed you barricaded some of the side streets, but not Main Street.
That was Sally's idea. The entire town is now a giant trap. The outlaws can get in on the Main Street, but once they're in town, they're going to play hell getting out again.
But what's to keep them from just turning around and heading back the way they came?
We got a couple of wagons loaded high with hay and boards in a circle in their beds. Once those bastards get past the city limits, I have some men ready to station the wagons blocking the street. And then they're going to crawl up into the hay and defend the entrance just in case Slaughter's men try to get back out that way.
So the entire town will be like a giant mousetrap. The rats can get in, but they can't get out again.
You got it, Pearly.
How about the citizens? Are they all behind us?
To a man. And that really surprised me. Even some of the men I've had to arrest on more than one occasion are standing firm with us.
It does not surprise me, my friend. The people of this town know you're the best sheriff we could ever hope to have. And the men you've incarcerated know it as well. I don't believe you realize just how many friends you have in Big Rock, Monty.
You're certainly right there, Lewis. Mary and I both thank our lucky stars we decided to settle here.
Just then, Andre appeared with 2 kitchen helpers following behind him. They were bearing platters heaped high with delicious-smelling food for the hungry men. Pearly reached down and fiddled with his belt.
What are you doing, Pearly?
Well, I'm loosening my belt to make room for all that food. The sheriff is mine, and I plan to eat my fill.
That I've got to see. I've never known you to quit eating because you're full, Pearly. It's always been because you ran out of food.
If the look on Pearly's face is any indication, Monty, you may have to get an advance on your paycheck to pay for his meal.
Smoke Jensen felt his heart swell inside his chest at the sight of his cabin on the Sugarloaf. He looked at Cal and Pearly.
Why don't you boys clean some of the trail dust off in the bunkhouse while I tell Sally hello?
Well, you mean you don't want us to stick around a while and tell Miss Sally hello, too?
I've been gone from home for more than a month. What do you think?
Oh, yes, sir. We understand.
The boys peeled off of the bunkhouse while Smoke rode on up to the main cabin. By the time he got down off Joker, Sally was running from the porch toward him.
Oh.
She threw her arms around his neck and gave him a very solid, very long kiss. Smoke leaned back and stared at her, his love evident in his eyes.
What? Don't a man get some breakfast when he comes home from work?
Sally took him by the hand and marched toward the cabin.
How about we have some dessert first?
But you always say that'll ruin my appetite.
That's not all I'm gonna ruin if you don't hurry up.
But don't you want to hear about my trip?
Later.
Yes, ma'am.
The next morning, Sally and Smoke sat in the kitchen and invited Cal and Pearly to join them. Pearly went straight for the bear sign cooling on a windowsill. Sally slapped his hand when he reached for one.
Oh! Gah.
Not now, Pearly. After breakfast. You'll ruin your appetite.
Oh, Miss Sally. I never known anything to ruin my appetite.
While they ate, the men took turns filling Sally in on the happenings on their journey to and from Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Her eyes widened on hearing of Cal's and Pearly's wounds.
We need to have Dr. Spaulding take a look at those, Smoke.
Already done, dear. He gave them both a clean bill of health. Though he did say Cal didn't have too much room left on his body without bullet scars on it.
Well, I told the doc I guess he'd have to start over again on the same old scars, because he dang sure ain't gonna quit getting shot.
I hear hoofbeats.
Smoke opened the door and looked out. Then he holstered his pistol.
Better set another place, dear. We got company.
After a few moments, Muskrat Calhoun stepped through the door.
Howdy, youngins!
When he caught sight of Sally, he removed his coonskin cap and gave a slight bow.
Morning, ma'am.
Good morning, Mr. Calhoun. My husband has told me how much you helped him, and I want to thank you.
Muskrat cut his eyes to the bear sign on the windowsill.
Well, a couple of those would do just fine as thanks, ma'am.
No, you have to join us for breakfast first. Then we'll have the bear sign.
That's why I never married. Dang women are always denying a man his pleasures.
She's a hard-headed woman, all right, but she's the only one I have.
Muskrat sat down at the table and piled his plate so high with food he could barely be seen behind it.
I will say one thing, ma'am. This is the best food I've had in many a year.
I'll go prepare a bath for Mr. Calhoun. I'm sure he'd like to freshen up after he eats.
I gotta bathe, too? Before I get any bear sign?
No, you can have the bear sign first, but the bath comes second.
You're right, son. She is a hard woman.
After Muskrat had his bath and Sally had thrown his clothes in a tub of hot water with lye soap in it, Smoke gave him some of his older buckskins to wear while the mountain man's dried. A short time later, they all sat out on the front porch drinking coffee.
What news do you have of Slaughter, Muskrat?
He managed to hire himself another 20 or 25 gunnies. Some of the worst pond scum in Pueblo, from what I could gather.
That figures. That means he must have more than 30 men with him, Smoke.
Yes. We're certainly going to have our work cut out for us in Big Rock.
I figure the way they're traveling, they'll be here in 2-3 days at the most.
Sally, we'd better get moved into town. Have all the surrounding ranchers been warned?
Yes, dear. The Norths are already there, and the others in the area have been put on guard.
You got room in that there town for an old beaver like me?
Hell yes. We can sure use that Sharp's big 50 of yours.
Good. Because I ain't had so much fun since Beartooth and me went to war against the Pawnee.
You went to war against the Pawnee tribes?
Sure did, boy. It happened like this. Me and Beartooth was trapping beaver up in a High Lonesome near the Pawnee's main camp. And a couple of right pretty young squaws happened by one morning. Well, we was just young bucks ourselves at the time, and one thing led to another, and before we knew it, we got to showing them pretty young things the difference between a white man and an Injun when it came to...
There was no stopping a mountain man once he'd started on one of his tall tales. Slaughter held his hand up to halt the column of men riding behind him when he came to the sign saying, Big Rock, Colorado. He twisted in the saddle.
Man, load him up 6 and 6 and watch your butts. I don't know if Monte Carson is in this town or not, but if he isn't, we're going to raise hell until they tell us where he's hiding.
Behind him, men pulled Winchesters and shotguns out of saddle boots and cradled them in their arms. They were ready to go to war, and each one felt there wasn't a town in the West that could stand up to a group of men such as theirs. Shopkeepers and pilgrims and cowboys, they were simply no match for men trained to use their guns to make war. And the sooner these citizens realized that, the sooner Slaughter would pay them their money.
What do you think, boys?
Slaughter looked to Whitey and Swede as they rode into town.
I just hope it's as easy as you think it is, boss. Treeing a western town ain't never been done before.
Here is the first time for everything, Swede. This is the roughest bunch of men I've ever had the pleasure to ride with. There ain't one of them that ain't killed more men than they can count.
Hell! With this band of desperados, I could take Dodge City itself.
Whitey pulled his Greener Express gun from his saddle boot and broke it open, checking his load.
I just want a chance at that Johnny West, or whatever he's calling himself today. I'm gonna spread his guts all over Main Street if he's in town.
A piece of advice, Whitey. I've seen West draw, so don't give him a chance to go for his gun. He's snake quick, and that shotgun won't do you no good if he feeds you a lead pill first.
He won't even have time to blink before I blow him all to hell.
Hey, boss!
Swede was swiveling his head back and forth as he looked at buildings on either side of the street.
What is it now, Swede?
There's something wrong here.
What do you mean?
There ain't nobody on the street. It looks like the town's deserted.
Slaughter looked around. For once, Swede was making some sense. Something was out of kilter here, all right. There wasn't a citizen in sight. Not even a dog or a chick. Something was going on. And Slaughter began to worry that perhaps he'd underestimated the ease with which they would take the town.
Uh-oh.
What is it?
Look over yonder.
Whitey pointed ahead down Main Street. There was a large sign stuck on a post in the center of the street. Painted on it in large red letters was...
Slaughter's Marauders, welcome to hell.
Slaughter pulled his Colt, the hairs on the back of his neck stirring with the warning. Now he knew they were in deep trouble. He jerked the reins of his horse's head around, getting ready to make a quick exit of the town. Then he saw three wagons blocking the street out of town.
Damn!
They got us blocked in.
Slaughter noticed his men were looking around, sudden worried expressions on their faces. Most were too stupid to realize the trap they were in.
Jim Slaughter!
The voice came from the roof of the Big Rock Hotel just up the street. Slaughter turned to look up, putting a hand up to shield his eyes from the sun. The man he knew as Johnny West was standing there next to Monty Carson. Carson had a long-barreled shotgun in his arms, while West had his hands empty.
Yeah? What do you want?
If you and your men drop your weapons, your men can leave peacefully. You, however, will be arrested, and in all probability, hanged.
My men and I haven't broken any laws. We just came into town to have a drink and be on our way.
I am the law here, Slaughter. You got one last chance to come out of this alive. Drop your guns now!
That one's mine!
Whitey swung his greener towards Smoke. Almost quicker than the eye could follow, Smoke drew. Whitey twisted in the saddle, a hole in his right chest, pumping scarlet blood onto the back of his horse's head. His lips pulled back over his teeth in a snarl, and with a mighty effort, he tried to raise the barrel of his shotgun towards Smoke. Slaughter's men all aimed their guns at the men on the roof. Jensen and Carson dove behind a wooden wall that had been erected on the rooftop, just as bullets began to pockmark the boards. Without warning, gun barrels appeared in many of the windows of the buildings along Main Street. Slaughter's men were being turned into raw meat. The horses reared and stampeded and crow-hopped, throwing some of the men to the ground, while others hung on for dear life as they galloped down the street and alleys trying to find a way out of the hell that Big Rock had suddenly become. Slaughter leaned over his horse's neck, saving his life as a slug meant for him took the animal in the throat instead and threw both of them to the ground. The outlaw scrabbled on his hands and knees through clouds of cordite and gun smoke toward the entrance to the hotel. Maybe, just maybe, he could survive long enough to kill Monty Carson, whose treachery had caused his whole mess. Swede leaned down in the saddle, spurring his horse forward and firing blindly at windows and doors as he rode down the middle of Main Street, desperately looking for a hole to crawl into. Juan Garcia and Chuck Clute, two outlaws from Texas who'd come to Wyoming to escape the Texas Rangers, wheeled their mounts around and raced back down Main Street, trying to get out of town the way they'd come in. The hell was Slaughter and his $1,000. They were 20 yards from the wagons blocking the entrance to town, and four men stood up from behind haystacks in the wagons, all leveling shotguns at the bandits. Boone Marlowe, who'd raped and killed more women than he had fingers, jumped off his horse and jerked open the door under the sign saying General Store. He stopped short at the sight of a man with a Winchester in his arm.
Welcome to Big Rock!
Sam Fleetfoot, on the run from the Injun Nations for murdering three Injun marshals, tried to jump his pony through a window in a boarding house to escape the murderous fire from the buildings all around him. And he made it through the window, shattering the glass, but he was knocked off his horse to land on his back on the wooden floor. A large piece of glass fell straight down, and Sam Fleetfoot held up his hands, getting his fingers sliced off as the sheet of windowpane neatly severed his neck. Muskrat Calhoun calmly took the twisted tobacco out of his shirt pocket. The bullet bumped into the wooden wall he was standing behind on the roof of the Big Rock Guardian. Yeah. He bit off a sizable chunk of tobacco, then rose up and leaned his sharps over the wall. It took but a second for him to spot and aim at a man riding down the street over 300 yards away. He put the sight 6 inches over the man's head. Whoa! He was spun half around by the recoil as the big rifle belched 2 ounces of lead toward the outlaw. Ernest Melton, noted murderer from Montgomery, Alabama, who killed 2 deputies and a family he took hostage in an escape before heading to Wyoming, never felt the slug that penetrated his spine between his shoulder blades and blew him over his horse's head, broken almost in half by the power of the Sharp's cartridge. Muskrat jacked another shell into the chamber and aimed again, this time at a man running toward a dressmaker's shop. The slug hit Happy Jack Morco in the arm and blew his right arm clean off.
You don't need no dresses nohow where you're going, sonny.
Haywood Arden stood in the doorway of his newspaper office, a shotgun in his arm.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Murderers killed in fatal attempt to take over town.
Marty Primbook, a stone killer who hired his gun out to anyone with the money to pay for it, decided he wasn't being offered enough money for this damn job, and he jerked his horse's head around and galloped towards an alleyway. James Hunt, rapist, mugger, and pederast, saw Frembook making a getaway and followed as fast as his horse would run. As they entered the alley, two figures stepped from the darkness of shadows among the buildings on either side. Pearly and Cal raised their colts. From his vantage point on the roof of the hotel, Smoke saw a Swede riding down the street toward the livery. He took two quick steps, jumped to the roof next door, and hurriedly climbed down the stairs on the side wall. Weaving through the alley, he entered the livery stable through the rear door. Swede was trying to burrow under some of the hay in the corner when Smoke stepped out into the light.
You got two choices, outlaw.
Swede jerked around at the sound of Smoke's voice, a pistol in his right hand, barrel pointed down at the ground.
What are those?
You can drop that gun and give yourself up and hang.
Not acceptable. What's the other choice?
I can kill you right here.
I got a pistol in my hand. Not even you are that fast.
I have a feeling we're fixing to find out. Right?
Goddamn right!
Swede jerked the barrel of his Colt upward. Swede stood there, surprised to look on his face. Then he looked down at the hole in his chest and the spreading stain on his shirt.
You killed me!
It appears that way.
I'll see you in hell.
Maybe, but not today.
Otis Andarko, Charlie Adams, and Joe Belcham ran their horses up on the boardwalk and made it as far as Longmont Saloon. They dove off their mounts and scrambled through the bat wing. As they straightened up, they saw two men standing at the bar. One was dressed in a black coat with starched white shirt and knee-high, highly polished black boots. The other wore a red checked shirt and Levi's jeans. And he looked like a cowboy.
Well, looky what we got here, boys. A tin horn card sharp and a sod buster.
Lewis Longmont picked up a shot glass and drained the whiskey in one draft, then looked at Johnny North.
Johnny?
Yeah, Lewis?
Should we kill him now or have another drink first?
Gosh, I don't know, Lewis. What do you boys think?
But we got you outnumbered 2-3.
I know the odds aren't fair, but we don't have time for you to get more men.
What?
It was to be his last question as Lewis and Johnny filled their hands with irons.
Lewis, let me buy you a drink this time.
Don't mind if I do.
Monte Carson climbed through the rooftop door and let himself down to the top floor of the hotel. Monty turned and found Big Jim Slaughter pointing a pistol at him.
You're the cause of all this.
No, I'm not, Jim. It's your greed and your stupidity that's brought you here.
I'm gonna kill you, Carson.
I don't think so, Jim. Not now, not ever.
As Slaughter eared back the hammer on his Colt, Monty dropped to one knee and raised his pistol. Monty got up, walked over to him, and rolled him over. Slaughter's face was gone, blown away by the exiting slug from Monty's .44.
Big Jim, you don't look so big now.
Smoke and the acrid smell of cordite hung like an early morning fog over Big Rock, Colorado. Townspeople were already going about the grisly task of piling corpses in the back of the buckboards for the short trip to Boot Hill. They were separating out the wounded, who who would be first cared for by Doc Spaulding, then jailed by Monte Carson, the man they'd come to kill. Smoke Jensen walked from the livery stable, blood oozing from a close call on his neck. He looked up and down the street, his ears still ringing from the sound of his Colts when he blew Swede to hell and gone, his pistols hanging at his side. He realized with a start how much he loved the smell and feel and gut-wrenching excitement of a fight. It was not something he was proud of, but he was a pragmatic man, and he knew that one's basic nature could be suppressed but never changed. He guessed it was something he was gonna have to work on.
Hey, Smoke, you all right?
Yeah, Lewis, I'm all right.
Lewis and Johnny North picked up the three dead men in front of the saloon and heaved them in the back of the truck Ford Ralph Morrow was driving down the middle of Main Street.
Looks like you boys had your share of action.
These men had the gall to interrupt our conversation over two glasses of Napoleon brandy. What else could we do but shoot them for their impertinence?
Cal and Pearlie sauntered up to join him.
Boys all right?
Pearlie was about to reply when a door slammed from across the street and a man staggered onto the boardwalk. His right hand was bleeding and his left was filled with iron. As he raised his pistol, Pearlie shoved Cal to the side and stepped in front of him.
Ow!
The bullet hit Pearlie in the side, punching through the thin layer of fat on his flank, half an inch under the skin, and exited out the back. As Pearlie doubled over, four pistols were drawn. The bullets all hit the outlaw, lifting him off his feet and flinging him back against the wall next to Doc Spaulding's office. Just as the doc came bursting out of the door, Doc ran to take a look at Pearlie.
I'm sorry, Smoke. He was unconscious, and I was removing a bullet from Haywood. He must have woken up and sneaked out the door.
That's all right, Cotton.
The doctor kneeled down and moved Pearlie's hand, checking his wound. Then he looked up and smiled.
Well, I think all this cowboy needs is a small bandage and something to eat.
Did somebody mention food?
Why'd you do that, Pearlie? Why'd you take that bullet for me?
Hell, boy. We done got a record going here. You've been through two gunfights without getting wounded. I just didn't want to spoil your streak.
Go on in, Pearlie, and have Andre fire up the stove. Tell him I said to fix you anything you want.
Pearlie put his arm over Cal's shoulder and began to hobble into the saloon.
Now, I don't thank you for taking that bullet. Now, don't go trying to make it more than it is.
I can't blame a fella for trying, can you?
Monte Carson stepped through the door to the hotel and made his way across the street. His shoulders were slumped with fatigue, and he looked dead tired. But he did have a smile on his face.
Well, it's finally over.
Yes, I believe it is. Did you finish Slaughter?
His raiding days are over.
Smoke looked up and glanced around the town, watching his friends and neighbors emerge from their stores and offices and homes to begin cleaning up the town.
Then it was worth all this.
Two weeks later, Smoke and Sally stood in front of Boot Hill. A light snow was falling, and the white blanket over the graves and markers almost made the place look pretty. Smoke nodded at the marker in front of him and said simply,
Jim Slaughter.
Smoke put his arm around Sally.
You know, sweetheart, if it wasn't for you, I could have ended up like that.
What do you mean, Smoke?
I realized during the fight in town that I love the feeling of putting everything you are and everything you own on the line in a fight to the death.
I know you do, dear. And that is why I've never tried to change you or to keep you from doing what you know you have to do. But you are as far different from the man lying there as day is from night. You may enjoy the contest of a fight, but you never start a fight or pick on someone who is weaker than you are.
Sally put her hand on Smoke's cheek.
You have a wonderful soul, Smoke. And in the final analysis, that is what separates you from men like Jim Slaughter.
They walked up the street away from the cemetery, arm in arm.
What are your plans now, Smoke?
After the snow season's over, I thought I might take Cal and Pearlie on a little trip down Texas way.
You're going to the King Ranch to get some Santa Gertrudis cattle like I wanted to, aren't you?
That idea of yours to cross them with our shorthorns is a good one. Besides, the There's nothing much going on down Texas way right now. No range wars or Indians left to fight. So, it'll be a nice, quiet trip. And I need the rest.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man, 25, Heart of the Mountain Man, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1999, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Elizabeth Jernigan, Kimberly Gilbert, Tim Getman, Drew Copas, Tim Carter, James Konachek, Richard Rowan, Thomas Keegan, Michael Glenn, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Eric Messner, Chris Shearer, Terrence Aselford, and Johann Detweiler. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaway. Directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and Smoke Jensen theme music by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Heart of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com and be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles and Sidewinders series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series. All available in graphic audio and road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
Yeah, this son of a bitch is guilty. You know it, and I know it, and I say, let's hang the bastard.
All right, it's now time to poll the jury. Jury, how do you find the defendant?
Guilty.
Well, yeah, so say you one, so say you all.
Yeah, that's what we all say.
Mr. Matt Jensen, you have been found guilty of murder and are sentenced to hang. On his way to Yuma to hang for a crime he didn't commit, Matt Jensen will be involved in the worst train wreck in Arizona history.
How's it coming?
We pulled out a couple of the spikes, but they're damn hard to remove.
They're supposed to be hard to get out. All you have to do is pull up enough of them to be able to push the rail out a few inches.
You sure that'll stop the train?
You ever seen a train run on dirt?
Now Matt will stop at nothing to bring the men responsible for killing so many innocent people to the only justice he knows. The justice of the gun.
It's you! You son of a bitch! I'm gonna gut you like a hog!
Like an avenging angel, Matt Jensen will deliver the villains unto the hands of the devil. In Matt Jensen, The Last Mountain Man number 3, Purgatory.
I'll see you in hell!
Not likely. I've done my time in purgatory.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for,
go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.